I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It's scary and frustrating that they don't know. It's like Mexico swallowed them. That's how I put it. They just vanished.
Missing voices. As the climate crisis intensifies across the globe, at least 196 environmental defenders were killed last year. We'll look at Global Witness's new report on the violent erasure of land and environmental defenders. This comes as Western governments, including the U.S., are increasingly targeting and jailing climate activists.
This climate crisis demands us to act drastically, radically, and promptly. We see governments being busy bullying climate activists.
Plus, we speak to the award-winning Cherokee journalist Rebecca Nagel about her new book, By the Fire We Carry, The Generations-Long Fight for Justice on Native Land.
By the Fire We Carry tells the story of a Supreme Court case that resulted in the largest restoration of tribal land in U.S. history. I wrote this book because I think the legacy of dispossession and genocide of Indigenous peoples is a problem not just for our tribes, but a problem for our democracy in this country.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, another Israeli strike on a UN school being used to shelter displaced Palestinians has killed at least 18 people, including six UNRWA employees, making it the deadliest single day for the UN agency UNRWA's history. Wednesday's bombing of central Gaza's Al-Jawouni school led to chaotic scenes with survivors seen gathering scattered body parts. It's the fifth time the same school's been hit by Israel since October 7th. The Palestinian foreign ministry is demanding international protection against the, quote, war of extermination and displacement on our people, unquote. On Wednesday, Hamas reiterated it's prepared to implement the U.S.-proposed UN-backed ceasefire plan announced by President Biden in June without any new conditions. Israel's military has killed four more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank as its deadly and wide-ranging incursion enters its third week. Since August 28th, Israel's killed at least 50 people across the West Bank. In Tulkarm, residents were forced to abandon their homes, taking shelter in a mosque as Israeli forces destroyed houses and businesses.
They destroyed our houses. They displaced us. All the people in the camp left. My house was exploded. The army put explosives inside my house and exploded it. The bulldozers swept the house and the rubble covered my neighbor's house. They forced us to leave the houses.
President Biden Wednesday called Israel's killing of 26-year-old U.S. activist, University of Washington graduate Aishadut Ezgi Aigi in the West Bank totally unacceptable. This comes after Biden received backlash for his previous lukewarm remarks about her killing, which he dismissed as apparently an accident. Biden, however, has not called for an independent probe into her death. Turkey says it's opened its own investigation into the killing of the dual U.S.-Turkish citizen. Russia's military has launched a major counteroffensive to retake territory seized by Ukraine. On Wednesday, the head of Russia's forces in Kursk said troops had liberated 10 settlements in the region. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has departed Ukraine after committing to keep sending aid to Kyiv. Blinken, however, did not greenlight the use of U.S.-made long-range missiles against Russia as sought by Kyiv. This is Ukraine's foreign minister.
To defend our people, brave steps from all of our partners are necessary. It's important to lift all restrictions on the use of American and British weapons against lawful targets on Russian territory. We need decisiveness, also in regards to shooting down Russian missiles and drones in Ukrainian airspace. The further Ukraine can strike, the closer a just peace will be.
Moscow vowed a, quote, appropriate response if Ukraine used U.S. ATACMS missiles to strike deep inside Russia. In India, authorities have declared a curfew and shut down internet access across the northeastern state of Manipur amidst a surge in violence between the majority Meitei and minority Kuki communities. At least 11 people have been killed in recent fighting that includes weaponized drone attacks on civilians launched by suspected Kuki fighters. More than 200 people have been killed since the violence broke out last year. Tens of thousands have fled the region. On Wednesday, student protesters marched to demand an end to the violence.
Should we choose war or should we study? Which side should we choose? Governor, respected chief minister, respected president, etc., please provide the means to stop violence in our small state of Manipur.
The UN reports 3.2 million children across Afghanistan face acute malnutrition nearly 23 years after the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. Nearly half of Afghan children are stunted, meaning they aren't growing to their full potential due to hunger. The BBC recently profiled a hospital in eastern Nangarhar province, which said 700 children died in the past 6 months of hunger and largely preventable diseases. In related news, Australia's military says it'll strip several senior commanders of distinguished service medals after a 2020 report revealed Australian Special Forces members committed war crimes during their operations in Afghanistan, unlawfully killing at least 39 prisoners and civilians. Australia's defense minister says prosecutors are also considering charges. In Venezuela, the government of Nicolas Maduro is threatening to cut ties with Spain after the Spanish Congress voted Wednesday to recognize opposition leader and former presidential candidate Edmundo González as president-elect of Venezuela days after he was granted asylum in Spain. But Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, who reportedly is meeting with González today, said he will not recognize González as Venezuela's president. This comes as Human Rights Watch warns Venezuelans who have attempted to flee the country, including during the post-election crackdown on protests, have few options for asylum or protection in neighboring countries, leading them to attempt to cross the treacherous Darien Gap. This is Human Rights Watch Chief Tarana Hassan.
Cases of asylum seekers and migrants we spoke to at the border, they said that they had actually watched the security forces open fire and shoot and kill protesters. They had watched the colectivas searching for those who participated in the protests.
Peru's former authoritarian president, Alberto Fujimori, died Wednesday at the age of 86. Last year, a Peruvian court released him from prison on humanitarian grounds. Fujimori had been serving a 25-year sentence since 2009 for human rights abuses, including kidnapping, bribery, and ordering massacres by death squads. Back in the United States, the father of an 11-year-old Ohio boy who died in a traffic accident involving a driver from Haiti is demanding Donald Trump, J.D. Vance, and other Republican leaders stop using his son for political gain. Vance recently referenced 11-year-old Aiden Clark as part of the far-right attacks on Ohio's Haitian community. Nathan Clark addressed the Springfield City Commission Tuesday.
They can vomit all the hate they want about illegal immigrants, the border crisis, and even untrue claims about fluffy pets being ravaged and eaten by community members. However, they are not allowed, nor have they ever been allowed, to mention Aiden Clark from Springfield, Ohio.
A new report tracking nearly 1 million births in New Jersey found doctors are far more likely to submit black birthing parents birthing patients for cesarean sections over white patients with similar medical histories. The study, published in the National Bureau of Economic Research, found unplanned C-sections on black patients are more likely to happen when hospital surgery rooms were empty, suggesting a financial motivation since surgical births result in higher medical bills. Harvard's revealed the percentage of incoming students who identify as African-American or black dropped to 14% this year after the Supreme Court rolled back affirmative action at college campuses. That's down from 18% the prior year. Brown, MIT, and Amherst also reported dips in black enrollment, though other universities, including Princeton and Yale, did not notice significant changes. Analysts say it could take a while to understand the full effect of the Supreme Court's ruling, which was widely condemned by colleges and civil rights groups. And Amnesty International is calling on President Biden to grant clemency to indigenous leader and political prisoner Leonard Peltier, who turns 80 years old today after nearly a half century in prison for a crime he says he did not commit. Leonard Peltier has always maintained his innocence over the 1975 killing of two FBI agents in a shootout on the Pine Ridge Reservation. His conviction was riddled with irregularities and prosecutorial misconduct. In a letter to President Biden, Amnesty International USA wrote, quote, "You have the opportunity to rectify a case that has long troubled human rights advocates and indigenous peoples worldwide," unquote. Vigils and other actions are being held today in Washington, D.C. and around the country. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. As the climate crisis intensifies across the globe, we begin today's show looking at the targeting and killing of environmental defenders. A new report by Global Witness finds at least 196 environmental defenders were killed last year. The deadliest nation for environmentalists and activists was Colombia, where at least 79 people were killed, most of them indigenous, Afro-Colombians, and farmers. Brazil had the second highest death toll at 25. Honduras had the most killings per capita. Meanwhile, in Asia, the Philippines is the most dangerous country for defenders. Global Witness found that about half of all Earth defenders killed in 2023 were indigenous peoples or Afro-descendants.
One high-profile case featured in the report involves the forced disappearance of the Mexican indigenous leader Antonio Diaz Valencia and the lawyer Ricardo Lagunes, who disappeared in January of 2023 after an anti-mining community meeting. Relatives of the men believe the transnational mining company Ternium was behind their abduction and possible murder. Antonio Diaz Valencia's grandson spoke to Global Witness.
It's scary and frustrating that they don't know. It's like Mexico swallowed them. That's how I put it. They just vanished. My papa has been a social activist his entire life. He's an activist for the rights of the indigenous people, specifically the Nahua people, to whom we belong. He is a person who is very, very loved and known throughout the region for the work he has done. He has basically given his entire life to his region. It's what he loves the most.
They claim that they need to remove some of the land, some of the vegetation, certain streams, to continue exploiting the terrain.
That was the voice of Mexican indigenous leader Antonio Diaz Valencia, who was forcibly disappeared in January of last year after attending an anti-mining meeting. The new Global Witness report also condemns the police killing of the environmental activist Manuel Esteban Terán, known as Tortuguita, during a raid on a Stop Cop city encampment in Atlanta, Georgia. Tortuguita, who is 26 years old, was shot 57 times by police bullets while peacefully protesting the multi-million dollar police training complex. No officers have been charged in Tortuguita's killing. We're joined now by Laura Furones, lead author of the new Global Witness report, Missing Voices, The Violent Erasure of Land and Environmental Defenders. She is senior advisor to the Land and Environmental Defenders campaign at Global Witness. She's joining us from Madrid, Spain. Laura, welcome to Democracy Now! Why don't you lay out your findings as wildfires torch the planet, as people are dealing with massive floods and hurricanes. Talk about those who are resisting climate change and what's happening to them.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I think you've laid it out really well in the introduction. Unfortunately, 2023 was yet another appalling year for those who want to protect their lands and their environment. And we recorded the killing of 196 people globally, with stark differences between regions. But this speaks very clearly to the fact that, you know, everyone's really talking more and more, and rightly so, about the climate crisis globally. But the climate crisis is also very intrinsically linked to a human rights crisis. We're seeing the levels of violence that you were just describing before being more and more prevalent around the world. And we really fear that this will intensify as the consequences of the climate crisis become more and more apparent.
So, Laura, could you explain, first of all, why you think this violence against environmental defenders is increasing, and also why Colombia has once again topped the list for the number of environmental defenders killed?
Well, violence is unfortunately not seemingly going anywhere. And I think that really is linked to the fact that the climate crisis isn't going anywhere. So we've got all these people who are really at the front line of this defense, really trying to protect natural resources that many others want to extract, or trying to protect the lands that others want to devote to sort of large agricultural projects. You know, the demand of commodities is growing around the world as well. So all of that, I think, combined, makes for a very dangerous sort of circumstances that defenders have to work under. And as you say, in the case of Colombia, this is particularly tragic, because year in and year out, this is one of the countries where we record the largest number of murders. You know, Colombia tops the rank in 2023. It also did the same in 2022. And if we look back at all of the historical data that Global News has gathered ever since we started recording cases in 2012, then you still see Colombia coming up as number one.
And in Colombia itself, it's not a general population. It's disproportionately the people who are killed are indigenous Afro-Colombians and farmers. Could you explain why that's the case?
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, we're talking about Nasa people, Nahua people, indigenous people, half of all of the killings in Colombia. And in fact, half of all defenders murdered across the world, 49% globally, are indigenous peoples and Afro-descendant communities. And obviously, this is no coincidence. These are the people who live in those areas that are better protected. We know science tells us very clearly that indigenous peoples are particularly good at protecting the lands they live in. And so, you know, the decreasing number of resources, natural resources the planet has as we continue to extract them, are still in the lands. And they're having to fend off all sorts of pressures to destroy the lands, to see the lands destroyed also, often in the absence of the state. So we're talking about often very, very remote areas where defenders are indigenous defenders, Afro-descendant defenders are pretty much alone and having to stand up to protect the lands and the natural resources. And it's in that sort of standing up and confronted peacefully that they're attacked.
Next month, interestingly, Colombia is hosting a major UN summit on convention on biological diversity. If you can talk about who is held responsible for these killings and disappearances, and then also talk about the number two country, which is Brazil.
Yes, I think the question around who is responsible really is one of the key questions. And unfortunately, to this day, the majority of the families whose relative defenders are murdered are asking the same question, and the answer is, we don't know. And we don't know because of a number of reasons. One has to do with, you know, just not having enough information about what's happened, who has committed these murders, and more specifically, one of the largest problems that, of course, defenders around the world are facing is impunity. Sadly, very, very few cases end up with a court sentence, you know, with data, with sort of research that concludes, you know, that can lead, shed some light around who has committed the crime. If we're lucky, we might see, you know, hitmen, hired assassins who are put in jail. But it's very, very rare. There's only a few, sort of handful of cases where the intellectual perpetrators, in other words, those who pay for the murders, those who want the defender murdered in the first place, it's very rare that we see those cases you know, leading to jail sentences and other sort of judicial consequences. In the case of Colombia, I think you rightly mentioned that Colombia is hosting CBD in just over a month, in fact. And, you know, I think Colombia, precisely because it's one of the most dangerous countries for defenders, has this fantastic opportunity to just lead the way. You know, they're hosting this big conference. They've also just ratified the Escazú Agreement, which is a very, very important agreement at a regional level that, you know, is about access to information. It's about access to justice, all these things that defenders and their relatives, the families desperately need. And in fact, the Colombian government has actually been making quite encouraging noises about the importance they give to protecting defenders, something we hadn't seen before in the country. So we're quite hopeful that these, you know, that this kind of entails serious commitments. Obviously, we're not seeing that, however, translate into reality quite yet. And so the figures still show Colombia sort of ranking at number one, way ahead any other country around the world.
And Laura, could you talk about the context in which these murders take place, principally, in particular, the role of the mining industry, of deforestation? If you could just elaborate on the context, where are these environmental defenders working? Who are the corporations and what kinds of corporations are involved?
Yeah, so to give you an example, you know, we're talking about obviously a very broad diversity of cases. But, you know, a classic example will be one where maybe a defender in Mexico, you know, you talked about this disappearance of two Mexican defenders. So, you know, maybe a defender in Mexico or Brazil or Colombia or the Philippines might be standing up against a mining industry that's trying to come and operate into the lands without even consulting them. You know, it's very common that we see sort of corporate interests coming to those lands where defenders live and, you know, starting the projects and not really consulting with them. Often the very first thing defenders see is, you know, bulldozers coming into the lands, and they've never heard of what's, you know, what's going to happen to those lands, and they never see any of the benefits that the large corporations get after those attractions. And although it's kind of very difficult, going back to the point about impunity and lack of information and lack of just, you know, making sure that the cases go through, you know, proper investigations, it's very difficult to establish direct links between the murder of a defender and a specific corporate sector. However, what we have been able to identify for 2023 is that mining came up as the largest corporate sector linked to defenders. And this is also true for our historical data. Mining sector is number one over the last 12 years. And, you know, other prominent sectors obviously include large agribusiness, they include logging interests, they include, you know, dams, they include all sorts of infrastructure. It's kind of large projects that very much happen without any consultation.
So, and Laura, before, as we begin to wrap, if you could talk about the fact is that the report finds that Latin America is the continent which is the most dangerous for environmental defenders. But explain what's happening in Asia and in Africa. According to the report, only two environmental defenders were killed in the DRC, but we suspect that the number is far higher. So what is happening across these two massive continents, Africa and Asia?
Yes, so that's absolutely right. Obviously, the levels of violence in Latin America are truly appalling. The, you know, the problem is real. And we actually are probably also underreporting in Latin America because it's not always easy to get. Sometimes, you know, families won't be prepared to raise concerns about attacks because they'll fear reprisals. And so this is already true in Latin America, even if it already reports very high numbers of murders. But this becomes even more challenging in other contexts. So Africa and Asia, as you mentioned, are good examples where we're absolutely certain that we're chronically underreporting. And this is for a number of reasons, including, you know, the difficulties in accessing information, which are way higher in those regions, particularly in some countries in those regions. It also speaks to civic space being very highly restrictive. But it also speaks to just the fear of people speaking up, you know. And so you mentioned DRC. DRC is a country where we have documented a number of cases, most of them actually related to the Virunga National Park. You know, no coincidence, again, that we're talking about some of the most biodiverse, some of the most natural resource rich regions or areas in the world, you know, the Congo Basin. And we're talking about largely park rangers, so state officials, you know, people who should be, who are hired by the state, should be protected by the state and are even so murdered. So what is the hope for those who don't have that level of protection, you know, for those indigenous peoples, for those Afro-descendant peoples, for those small-scale farmers who are being attacked? They have very, very little hope of being helped by the state.
I wanted to ask you, finally, about the United States, included in your report. Last year, police in Atlanta fatally shot the environmental activist Manuel Esteban Terán, known as Tortuguita, during a raid on a Stop Cop City encampment in Atlanta. Tortuguita was 26 years old, struck 57 times by police bullets while peacefully protesting the multi-million dollar police training complex. No officers charged in their killing. As we wrap up, your final comments.
Well, I would say that, you know, it's very easy to look at this through the lens of, you know, violence happening elsewhere, you know, way, you know, in Colombia, in Philippines, in countries that are really far away from the U.S. But the case of Tortuguita, the horrible case of Tortuguita, you know, really paints a clear picture of what's going on. Like, the levels of violence might be different, but it's certainly true that in northern countries, killings might not be as high. But we can see across the US, across the EU, the UK, you know, other sort of northern countries, how the peaceful demonstrations that are, you know, happening as the climate crisis intensifies are met with criminalizations, they're met with threats, they're met with other types of attacks. So I would really say that I'd like to say that, you know, it's really important that we link the two things together. You know, what happens in producer countries where those mining companies or logging companies are operating is not dissimilar. You know, it's linked to what happens in consumer countries. And we, you know, activists in both global north countries and global south countries are fighting against the same interest and being met with very worrying levels of violence.
Laura, we want to thank you for being with us. Laura Forones is lead author of the Global Witness Report, Missing Voices, the Violent Erasure of Land and Environmental Defenders, speaking to us from Madrid, Spain. We'll link to that report. Coming up, Western governments, including the U.S., increasingly targeting and jailing climate activists as the climate catastrophe gets ever worse across the globe. Back in 20 seconds. By Kuritha. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We turn now to look at how many Western governments, including the United States, are cracking down and even jailing climate protesters. The group, Climate Rights International, has just issued a report titled On Thin Ice, Disproportionate Responses to Climate Change Protesters in Democratic Countries. This is a short video accompanying the report.
Hello, it's Morgan. I'm a civil engineer from London. As part of Just Stop Oil, I'm occupying the QE2 bridge. We just survived the first night up here. We're up here until the government makes a meaningful statement to cancel all new licenses and consents for oil and gas extraction, because oil and gas is killing us now and it's driving millions into poverty.
It needs to be done because we act on behalf of life.
Morgan Trolland and Marcus Decker climbed the Queen Elizabeth II Bridge outside London to raise awareness about climate change. For 36 hours, they stayed on top of the bridge. For their peaceful protest, Trolin served 14 months in prison, and Decker spent over 16, the longest sentences ever for a peaceful protest in the United Kingdom. Decker, a German national, is now being threatened with deportation. The United Kingdom is not the only government responding harshly to climate protesters. Many democratic governments in the global north are passing harsh new laws which restrict the fundamental right to peaceful protest and imposing heavy penalties, including prison.
In Germany, which considers itself a strong democracy, a very free country, we're seeing increasing